The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Ticket Stock. It's Tuesday, the 5th of September, 2023. I'm John by Cashmere John, but smartened up there in his penthouse flat in London. You're all right, John?
Yeah, not bad. How you doing?
I'm just finding it so boring, these markets. So boring. It's depressing me. It really is depressing me.
I mean, I think we're still in the phase of good companies putting out decent news and getting punished for it.
Yeah. Well, but, do you know what?
That's not fun.
I did say, by all means, I put a little poll out there, last minute poll, saying, what are you in this market? Are you a buyer? Are you a seller? Are you a holder? I think most people pretty much have sold if they want to sell, don't they? And the only thing I'm sort of buying at the moment is literally my fund that is sort of automatically, buys every month, pretty much. That's about it. And I'm sticking around because I've seen companies starting to rally, then fall off. And you had a couple of, nano or micro caps rallying, but they soon come back a little bit. It is like bottom fishing a little bit, isn't it?
I mean, it's just tough. I'm not sure that seller exhaustion is complete yet.
Really? I'm exhausted.
But not everyone is. Until the last bear has been flushed out, the last seller's flushed out, you've always got the risk that things sort of just trend lower, to grind lower. I was an analyst, started my career in a city during the dot-com deflation. It just went on for years.
Well, let's have a look at where the indices are. Here we go. I mean, do you know what? It's just turned positive. It was a little bit negative. The FTSE's gone up a little bit by 0.15%. That's typical of the markets. By all means, comment. Let me know. Are you in the market to buy? Are you trying to sell? Are you trying to get out of stocks? Or are you just holding? Let me know. A comment there on the YouTube there. But like I said, that's typical of the market right now. Look at it. FTSE 350, 0.11% up. The AIM All share, 0.07% up. It's like, it's so thin, so, liquid, paper thin sort of margins there, gains. Centrica's rise on the FTSE. 250 is the only indices down at the moment, which, of course, largely seen as a more UK-based. And in fact, what's interesting here, well, the fall is here. Where was it? 250 or 150? Oh, B&M European Value, of course. They've just agreed to buy, I think, 50 of Wilko stores. And I think you've got to question that area. It's very competitive market. And if Wilko, if he's a good buy, I don't know, can you turn that around? I mean,
They won't try and turn it around. They'll just put B&Ms in Wilko stores.
Yeah.
Presumably. Yeah. Wilko is a brand. I mean, it's not...
I hear people comment it's the much loved Wilko brand. Really? People don't really care about brands. I mean, they say the high end, but when it comes to like low end, cheap, cheerful shopping, they care about the price, good quality and a low price. That's what they want. That's why Aldi and Lidl done so well, because they are good quality and they're good price. Now, if you can't deliver on both those, then you're out. People don't care about the brand. People are not going to go in there just because they like the sound and the sort of sign of Wilko's. It's got to be it's going to be good, isn't it?
No, definitely not. People do go into a B&M because they're sort of people like a fun place to shop. You sort of go into B&M with the intention of buying one thing, and you come out with 20 things you never knew you needed. That was the strength of that business model. I mean, actually, just go, looking at their share price, I mean, it's probably worth having a look at a graph of this. It's quite extraordinary.
Look at the AIM All. I'm loaded here. The share screen. The AIM All share now. Listen, tomorrow's a big day. 2 years since the high on the AIM All share, pretty much 730 days down 44%. Now, you've got to understand, that's the AIM All share. That includes some of the winners as well. It's down 44%. That's an index. That's a big drawdown, isn't it? It's a very, it's including all the winners that, as well. Yeah. And some of the losers, not really badly, but B&M, is it?
Yeah, honestly, this chart is a humdinger of a chart.
B&M, so, oh yeah.
So, you've had that COVID fall, obviously, and then, get scan out a bit longer, and then you had a real rapid ascent.
Yeah.
As sort of the reopening trade carried on. And then, look at that. Then it got absolutely thumped. Profit warning, board management change at the top. Almost back down to sort of pandemic lows and then off again.
Yeah. Looking in hindsight, right now, look at where we are on AIM. Anything you'd bought in that COVID, when the fear was at max, That's when to buy, isn't it? That is when there's blood in the streets. The COVID lockdown, you could have bought any share, you know, average in down here, and you've done well. You know, it's and in fact, right, now, it's you know, look at AIM. We are going back. I mean, if you go back, as I put this on, I mean, it is having patience. I understand that. My patience is running out.
Well, B&M is a FTSE 100 company trading like a small cap there, as far as I can see. You know, I mean, I do think it's an interesting company, but like, you know, one of the theses as to why B&M would do well is because, you know, it's catering to a more cash-constrained market. You know, it sells things cheaply and therefore will be the place where people gravitate when times get a bit tougher. So you know, that may be why, you know, we've seen something of recovery this year. Trading has certainly improved from what caused the sell-off in 2022. But yeah, I think it's a funny old business. I'm not convinced. I try not to go in there anymore, just in case I come out with a plastic garden gnome or something.
Plastic bag full of tat. You think, what do I buy that for? But when it comes to these kind of shops, I defer to my wife, and she prefers a lot of them, sort of Aldi, Home Bargains. Those are two favourites. And then she pops into Asda. There's a loyalty scheme now in Asda, which she's really into. And I don't know if they're going to whittle that down like sort of Tesco's did, but it really sort of pays. You earn money with that loyalty scheme in Asda. So they're winning people back, I think. But look at this. The AIM All Share here, right? We are getting back now to literally July 26, apart from the COVID, which everything was locked down. But, you know, take that out. And going back to July 2016, that's the level we're at. And that's quite a strong drawdown since the last 2 years.
Mm.
So I don't know where the bottom is, but it seems it isn't close. But I don't think it'll be a fast, that we said yesterday, I don't think it'll be a fast re-rate, because you still have businesses now, you know, having to deal with higher costs on every level. From being squeezed at both ends, you know, inflation and then interest rates at the other end. So,
well, I'm holding, you know, not in a hurry to sell anything.
Yeah,
certainly not selling when things are depressed prices that arguably shouldn't be, if you've researched them well, and you know, you can see that there's value in those companies and that trading is okay. But I'm not rushing to buy either. Although I do think there are going to be lots of opportunities out there, I think it's worth spending time to work out what they are. As I said, you know, previously, I have sold. The one I sold was Somero. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that looked to be a very good decision. In hindsight, it was a good decision. Some management changes there recently. Again, one of the top bods has been replaced. So, yeah, I just don't think that's a happy ship. So, you know, it's case-by-case basis for buying, holding, selling. But I am scanning, watch list.
Yeah, well, and things are still taking a big hit. I mean, you know, if they come out with, you know, there are basically three areas when a company releases news it can fall into. They can exceed expectations, meet them, or go below. Now, even if you meet them in this market, it could go down if it doesn't read very well, the RNS. I don't know if you saw Sondrel last week. We missed that on the Friday or Thursday. It's a chip. And in fact, I think Paul Hill holds some of those. It went down 60-odd% on Thursday or Friday because it missed guidance and reviewed the revised down, and it's still going down. Nashad said yesterday, commented, reason for small caps going down is complete lack of liquidity. Big companies do redemptions, possibly Brexit as well. But there is a thing with redemptions. I understand that when you know, they have to, if you've got, you know, small macro caps, you know, funds holding those companies, and then, you know, when people sell, they have to sell or sell some stocks in those companies. And that hits very, in a bear market, when there's lack of liquidity, you know, a big sell can take it down a lot, and you get that. Until that dries up, it's a little bit worrying.
I think I think the comment is 100% spot on.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's happening.
Let's look at Sondrel. Look at this is a scary looking chart. Look at that. That's what happened. We just put this a share with you. But look at that. 64% down.
Oof.
On that trading update. But going forward, their order book looks quite good. But of course, an order book is not contracted completely. But I was looking at the broker forecast, and they were, I think, attracted to do it. They're expecting about 28 million of revenue. Now it's gone up to 13 for this year. So looking forward, it's going to be up to, I think a lot more than that, a lot higher. But a lot of that is, you know, it's not contracted, but it's a pipeline of order book. So that's a little bit worrying. Someone did question, John. I look back. Steve says, hi, Justin, John. Would you appreciate your thoughts on Graft Polymer, down 81% year to date, but is winning contracts in three in the last 6 weeks. I think it's potentially an opportunity in a space that could grow in the coming years. Now, if we look at their RNS and their GPLS ticker, they have come out with a lot. And in fact, I think this company rings a bell. I remember interviewing them when they IPO'd. Based in Slovenia, I believe, but Graph Polymer, you say R&D supply agreement, manufacturing services agreement. But I was looking at
R&D supply agreements. You've got to ask the question what that actually means. And how meaningful they actually are. So, you know, I'm just looking at the one that's announced. What day is it? Yesterday. You know, it's the third R&D supply agreement in the last 2 months, but I haven't really put any numbers on it. Yeah. And it's for. It's basically research around environmentally friendly plastics. Now, obviously, this is going to be a big area. It's something that you know the planet needs. You know, the plastic waste is hugely problematic. So, you know, I like the story and the thesis behind companies that are addressing these sort of problems. And Graph Polymer is one of them. You know, it puts a number on the size of the market. You know, the PET market's going to double. You know, in the next sort of 7 years.
Yeah, you always got to look for growing end markets in a sustainable environment. So,
yeah.
This is it. The only thing worries me, they did IPO. I spoke to them in April. They raised 5 million. What is worrying you? I don't know if they've raised since, but they had, at the end of the period, which is the 31st of December, they had 1.64 million. I'm thinking, well, how much are they burning then? And so the operating loss, I mean, obviously some costs in there, listing costs in there, but operating loss 2.7. So thinking, okay, did they raise any money since or what? Because that's a little bit concerning that they haven't got, you know, cash, because that they've gone through a lot of cash there in, you know, first 6 months there. So straight away you think, okay, how is their cash position? And I want to see more evidence. Maybe they could come up with the interim soon. I don't know. But
EBITDA loss last year was two and a half million there or thereabouts. So yeah, you know, it is pre-profit. It is cash hungry.
Yeah.
R&D supply agreements. They sound, you know, they're obviously good to have. It's obviously good to have struck these agreements with very large, you know, chemical plastic producing companies. But what you really want to see is an R&D supply agreement turn into an actual supply agreement. You know, one that becomes meaningfully sized.
Yeah. So as far as the chart concerned, they have. It's been a nightmare. So they listed here at sort of 22 pence. They're now down at 2.6 pence. But I mean, they can break out of that box maybe. They've tried to get above that 3 pence level a couple of times, but they haven't managed to do it. But I'm thinking, if anything, it may be concerns of cash there. Who knows? And also, you know, what these contracts actually mean. You can't, like I say, there's no numbers in there. That's the trouble. And you can have lots of contracts coming up, but do they mean anything? Okay, front page of Vox, Beyond Bricks, 5 companies helping to make buildings smarter and greener. This is Lauren's piece here.
Yeah.
What's this about, John?
Interesting stuff, this. Particularly commercial real estate, a lot of it is old, to put it one way, to put it simply.
Yeah.
There's a lot of regulation coming in that is aimed at making buildings essentially more environmentally friendly. And the built environment is a massive contributor to carbon emissions, both in terms of how they're built, you know, the materials that are used to build them, and how they're operated. You know, obviously they need a lot of lighting, a lot of heating, all that sort of stuff. And also, you know, buildings are quite complicated things. You know, they're sort of living things almost. So there's a lot of bits in them that need to be managed to make them more environmentally friendly, not just how they're built, but then how they're operated on an ongoing basis. And there's a big problem across the real estate sector. And it's probably why a lot of valuations in real estate are you know, obviously the economy is not good for them. The inflation and interest rate backdrop is not good for real estate. But there's this other problem, which is that a lot of buildings could be rendered, you know, well, not worthless necessarily, but sort of significantly lower than perhaps been on the books for before, because they don't meet these new environmental standards. And this report is essentially looking at a number of companies that help real estate owners operate those properties more efficiently, construct and operate them more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we got in there, let's look, some of the companies mentioned here are Crimson Tide.
Crimson Tide.
Check
They're it. Working with the NHS. So, you know, NHS, huge estate there, and, you know, lots
markets.
Of...
Yeah.
And supermarkets. Smart Space One, they had a little update today, launched a new product. But yeah, they're sort of building management, how people actually interact with the building. Kinovo, company I quite like, actually. I don't know if you've spoken to them, but they're basically most of their work is with sort of local authorities, that sort of organisation, helping them with regeneration projects, you know, say decarbonising buildings, you know, sort of consultancy.
Have you seen Birmingham just now? Birmingham Council, is it? Birmingham Council just a file for bankruptcy?
Oh God! I mean, this is happening across the country.
Yeah, that's neat. Cool.
Yeah,
it's a bit worrying.
Yeah.
Okay, what else was there in Beyond Bricks? There was
We have Aleko, which I know is a Paul Hill favourite, and there is one more. Who are?
There was Check It, I think.
Check It, that's the other one.
Plenty of cash, Check It, and. I did look at them before, but I just want to rally, come back down. Okay.
Yeah. So, the other trend that obviously this plays into in a big way is Internet of Things. So, you know, a lot of buildings can now, you know, because there's so much potential information in a building, and, you know, employ using sensors and connecting them to a network under this sort of Internet of Things umbrella is basically, you know, how one manages a building in a modern way. Very, very data driven. So, yeah, that's exactly what these companies do. And definitely something to keep an eye on. You know, the schools crisis at the moment is a very good example of the difficulties of managing large estates, large property estates, particularly when you're a local authority or a commercial property owner.
Yeah. Okay, a question or comments here. What is your favourite UK dividend stock? I guess I don't have a favourite UK dividend stock. I believe you've only got a certain amount of time to research companies, you know, and I do prefer, like I said, big companies to me are just a bit boring, and but I understand the power of dividend reinvestment, and so I've just gone for a dividend fund, and I'll cover that, but yeah, I think I mean, you know, house builders in for a bit of a tough time, toy time. But I mean, are there the lows or close to those? Who knows? So I think if you're looking at a longer term perspective, they may be a good one. Who is the typical? I tell you what's quite surprising, John. I got a filter on 52 week lows, basically. And one of the big favorites, I don't know what the dividend's like for most fund managers, Diageo. And Diageo's hit the 52 week low recently. And I thought, wow, I didn't expect to see that, because they've always been mentioned as a quality stock. But I thought it's a 52-week low. And I'll show you the chart here. And it's not rolling over, but it's, you know, that's a weekly chart. If you go back to look at that Diageo.
Wow.
I don't know what's
that's the my kind of that's my kind of company.
Yeah.
Like when it sells, and I like a quality, you know, internationally led. Company with that's going cheap. Although, having said that, the forecast P is nearly 20, so not exactly cheap.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
But, you know, when you get companies like that, though, it's worth keeping an eye on, because I've always heard, you know, fund managers going, we hold Diageo because we think it's quality brand. And I've heard so many people talk about Diageo. So it's nice. Well, it's nice to see it rolled over. I mean, the opportunity there to get in.
I'm looking at that, and I'm very tempted.
Yeah. Do you have? I mean, look at that. It's
not. It wouldn't be my favourite dividend stock, because it's only yielding about 2.5%.
Yeah. What dividend wise? I mean, you know, your H&T. Does that
H&T in my portfolio? I mean, you know, I've got BT. BT pays a 6.5% yield. But you know, whether I've described that as my favourite stock, given how badly it's performed, is another matter altogether. But H&T, you know, is a great company, good performer.
Yeah.
Although it's been a bit soft recently, but pays nearly, you know, 5% forecast dividend yield. That would do nicely. Yeah.
Okay, someone says, morning guys, thoughts on Verici. Now, I did hold Verici and it rallied very strongly, and I put a stop loss in because I'm aware of, you know, how these things can roll over very quickly. And of course, they're in sort of kidney transplants, sort of predictive, you know, basically.
Non-invasive diagnostics.
Yeah, diagnostics, yeah. And how kidney transplant likely to take or not, or medication needed, or all that stuff. And they got three sort of products. But they did have plenty of cash. And someone said, apart from cash, is there any reason for decline? But I don't know. Where is the cash level at? Because, you know, you say apart from cash, there's nothing more important to a company that's pre-revenue than, you know, cash. You know, that is the most important thing of all. So, I mean, we have got this. We are seeing this rolling over. We had a lot of rallies, you know, in March, April. And we are seeing this sort of rollover through summer months of many of these stocks, microcap stocks. But as far as cash is concerned, I mean, I don't know where they are on that. But,
cash balance, they've got a decent amount of cash, 10 million. At the end of last year. So, and you know, that was...
A cash run rate in mid-2024, so shouldn't be a problem there.
No, cash isn't. Yeah. Cash doesn't look like it's a problem here.
Yeah.
And, you know, the clinical trials suggest that their treatments work. So, you know, I mean, has it got enough?
There has been a seller in there. I don't know whether it's still there, maybe drip feeding. Of course, like I said, in this day and age, when you have, a small seller in there, it can take it down. It doesn't need a big seller because if it's if you look at the volume on this, what's the average daily volume? It's 200,000 shares at 8p. What's that? And I always look at it. If you're going to Vox, by the way, they'll have average volume here. And when you ever get into micro cap stocks, it's worth looking at that because you're going to be careful of the size. If you've got, if you're a big size investor or trader, you may be able to get in. But you may not be able to get out, unless it takes a big hit. So you go, 200,000, times by 0.08p, and that's like 16 grand a day total volume. Now, you can say half that maybe is, 8 grand of that is probably sell. So if you look and sell any more than that, you're going to find it very hard to get out. So, Nash said, when it's lack of liquidity, small sales will take it down,
They do have a product in the market though, I mean, it's starting to deliver revenues. It's been granted Medicaid approval, so can be prescribed over in the US. And what's the forecast here? 6 billion revenues 2024, but at that point it's still loss making. So maybe the concern is that a mid 24 cash runway isn't quite enough.
Laconic says cash fine, but looks like it will need a bridge to profitability. I think so.
Okay. That's exactly.
Craig says, morning, what are your thoughts on SMD? We talked about this. Who is the expert that came on? He posted a lot on this.
Spectral.
Yeah, Spectral MD, yeah.
And that's funny.
The NASDAQ shares. And was it like around about equivalent to around about £1 on NASDAQ? When's the date for this?
I haven't looked at this. Somebody mentioned this to me today, strangely. A trading friend of mine. So there's obviously something to pay attention to here.
They are going to NASDAQ, but by takeover by, where is it?
Yeah, but
I don't know when you need to hold shares by.
Why are we still looking at it? This is a done deal. There's something interesting to look at here.
Yeah, well,
let me go away and have a look at that.
It's a potential doubler, they said. So there we are. Okay, someone did say, actually, did someone cover this? Yeah, Tissuegenics. Lauren, she's busy today. But someone said, can you have a look at Tissuegenics? And because they had interim results the other day and also release a product. What's quite interesting is if you look at the most read, it is one of the most read as well, is that the new sports product is above the interim results, And you think, really, interim results is a bit more important than the new product. But people like new stuff, don't they? Oh, it's a lot more potential upside with new stuff. But so interim results, did you look at these, John, or not?
I did. 90%. I did. What? I mean, this is a really nice looking company. It's not, I think it's obviously, sports medicine is a big market. But actually, this kind of thing is becoming increasingly applicable, in a broader healthcare scenario anyway, as you sort of get this aging population effect and, all the sort of things that come as your body gives up on you. So it's a really interesting looking company. Just looking at the numbers, I mean, it's going to do, what did it do last year? Did 25 million a turnover last year, not quite profitable, but forecaster to be profitable. In 2024.
Okay. What's top line there? Because they've grown 19% in interim since last year, compared to last year.
They're going to do 29.6 million this year, 35.2 in 2024, at which point it delivers a small pre-tax profit, 0.34 million. But, we want to see companies get into profitabilities, but particularly when they're in the healthcare space, where that can take some time. It's got a good portfolio of products. They meet a market need. Cash wise, I can't remember.
They've got
exactly
$4 million. $4 million of cash. But I'm, so, I mean, you know, I'm showing you the balance sheet here. But look at this. They do have like $6 million of non-current debt, and about $5 million of only a little bit of debt. So a little bit of debt, not a huge amount.
No. Yeah. So you know, and the fact that it has debt means it can have debt, which is also you know, good. It means it's got the support of bankers. So you know, if you look at that. That long-term share price graph.
Yeah, it's literally, where else has it come down from? It's, I don't know what's happened or changed there, but
I mean,
32 quid to 52 pence. But it has had a rally. I mean, you know, breaking, almost a breaking about 200-day moving average, and it needs to get about that again, really, but it's in a bit of a range here. So, yeah, so, you know.
I mean, that share price is extraordinary, you know, especially for a business that, as I say, you know, it does look like it's on the path to profitability, and that's what I want to see with these sort of you know, pre-profit companies. That, you know, how is it going to get there? And I think in the case of this company, we can see how it's going to get there.
They shed some parts of the business or something. I mean, why was it valued at that? I mean, obviously they've already issued some shares there since, but at 32 quid down to 52 pence. What's going on there?
Yeah.
Anyone know the story there? Okay.
Worth a look.
Yeah, so Lauren comes out. 80 Energy, always a favourite. One of the most read. I don't know. They basically are saying that that's a volatile chart there, but obviously near the lows here. But they say when they get the rig in place.
It's a flow test. I mean, you know, they keep the market regularly updated with what's going on there. You know, it looks like a decent prospect. It's next door to a producing prospect. What is it producing? Pantheon Resources, whether that's producing or just sort of a firmed up prospect, I can't remember off the top of my head, but, you know, nicely located in terms of the sort of Alaskan infrastructure. You know, so it's not really my sector, but it doesn't, it looks like it's, you know, it's doing things the right way.
Yeah. So they said the Hickory One well is targeting, this is what investors like, they're targeting 647 million barrels of oil. Of course, they have to refine that and put it in barrels. The barrels would just pop out of the ground.
No, but that's the point. The location and, you know, whether it's well located or not. And as I say, the infrastructure where it's drilling exists. So that helps a great deal.
Yeah. No, I mean, Alaska's a well-known area for, obviously, lots of oil potential. Okay, let's just have a quick look at the winners. Myriad is up. I looked at all the winners today, and none of these, apart from, in fact, AFC is an interesting chart. Look at AFC, we've covered this yesterday.
Yeah, we spoke about it yesterday.
Yeah, but look at this. It's broken. Well, it did, look at that. Well, I did put this sort of range on yesterday, saying it needs to break above this. It's sort of done that, and it's trying to get above that 200-day moving average. It's come back down a bit, but
I mean, this is the converse of low liquidity. So, you know, if there's a tiny bit of selling pressure, then shares will stay, you know, in the doldrums or continue to fall. You know, if you get a small amount of buying, or, you know, reasonably significant amount of buying on a company where the sellers have gone and liquidity is poor, that's going to have the opposite effect.
Yeah. Alchemy Capital is one of the most followed here. It's wholly on subsidiary report. They're doing feasibility of Australia's first standalone lithium. So have you heard of Alchemy?
Nope.
Essentially, they're setting up, I think they're setting up a lithium refinery.
It's a processing model, looks at that. As we said yesterday, you know, there's plenty of lithium in the world.
Yeah.
It's getting it out of the ground, getting it, you know, ready for use is where the difficulty lies. So, you know, that's sensible.
What was Caffey Gold and copper? I mean, it seems to be good. I mean, talk about difficult jurisdictions. They do an operation update, and they're saying the Tulu Kapi Gold Project nears construction startup. As long as I've been looking at microcaps, I'm sure that's been going on. So it's been a long, and I'm sure if you look at the chart here, and it always rallies now and again, but it just seems as, you know, they've had civil wars there, everything in Ethiopia, and they've had to deal with all that. And you can see the share price, if you zoom out from 2016, it's come down massively. And you've had these massive rallies, expectations of something happening, and delays and then having to raise funds. So, yeah, it's a hard environment in the thing. G50 is one of the most read as well, because, of course, it's gone through a major change. It's a stock that I lost money on, having been up several 100%. I don't know how I did that. I'm a right idiot. But the new CEO come in, and he's bought pretty much 2% of the shares today. It's a newly restructured company, focused on some, you know, digital media. There's a little bit of, you know, Twitter chat, but this guy is going to bring in his friends and all that stuff. But it's a bit of ramping going on. But who knows? We'll see what he does, because it's been a hard journey for like G50 holders. A really hard journey.
Yeah,
one of the companies I thought had some promise in esports and digital media, but the esports has been, you know, spun off, or not even spun off, sold for quid or something like that. Ridiculous. What else was there on the most read? Anything?
Nothing that caught my attention, I have to say. It's more on the sort of rise.
Palerian just came in with a thing.
That must have come out after later in the day.
That's just been come out now, is it? Yeah, 10 to 12. That's come out. Payment arrangement.
Yeah, it's a funny old title.
In line with expectations. So this is reimbursement code, price range. Are you aware how the medical market works?
It's Medicaid, isn't it? Medicaid, whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what we were just saying about, who was it? Verici. You know, it's important stuff.
Yeah.
It's important stuff. Yeah. I'll tell you who I spoke to today, which is going to be up on the site hopefully soon. It's Get Busy there. If you actually go to the Fallers today.
In fact, they are one of the Fallers. And I think, why is that then? So,
That's a good question. It's a good question.
They are down.
They're down about 14%. But I spoke to them and I looked at the numbers. It does basically sort of document workflow management for a large professional professional services organisations. You can imagine the amount of paperwork that sort of makes its way around the sort of world of accounting and legal. Absolutely vast quantities of paperwork, much of which is digital now. And this is what this company does. It helps companies manage this, you know, document signing, document archiving, as I say, workflows. Really difficult stuff to get right. Companies have to get, you know, abide by regulation, and the sheer volume of documentation is very, very difficult for staff to manage. And obviously there's the ever-increasing risk of cyber attacks. So that's what this company does, transitioning to a software as a service model. Really high levels of recurring revenue, really high levels of upfront payment, which is something you very much like to see. Very high gross margins, which you'd expect from software as a service, and a massive market potential. So it's quite interesting. I'm curious about that share price fall, but I couldn't say anything in the numbers that really, really troubled me. It did make a loss, but it's basically self-funding. So it's using that great cash generation profile to stick money back in the business, invest in sort of sales and marketing partnerships with big, ERP platform providers, and invest in the tech. So yeah, really curious as to why that's down today. Because I look at those numbers, I thought they were all right.
Another one that fell, so someone's been buying in, I think, but look, if you look at the volume, average here, average one is normally 350,000, so 2.4 million a day. So this is Blackbird. You're aware of Blackbird? They're basically, they say they're award-winning technology developers and tools based on this world-leading cloud video platform, Blackbird. A lot of sort of sports teams use this in the cloud, sort of video editing, you know, on the go when they're sort of filming events and stuff. But they had a massive, I think it was, signal beforehand, but revenue down 36%. Yeah.
It's a difficult market, and you know it's fast moving. Video editing, obviously you had the sort of the go-to providers like Adobe, who've been around for many years, and have, you know, obviously the biggest market share, and then you've got lots of other sort of smaller players that are coming along, you know, trying to take a bite of it, trying to do specialized things. But now you've got AI, which is chucked into the mix as well, which is kind of potentially changing the entire way that these kind of sort of creative tools actually work. So, you know, a big drop of revenue there, against the backdrop of an industry that's really fast moving and potentially one that's going to be overturned by AI. Is, you know, that's not a great spot to be.
Yeah, look at this. I mean, excellent rally. I saw this. Someone sort of tweeting me all the time. This is rallying. So you go get this. And I thought, you know, to me, it still wasn't cheap. I mean, even on, you know, because you are looking at, like I said, the loss making 1.6. They got plenty of cash there. But even this drop, you know, the 31 million, and they're going to be doing $2-3 million of revenue, which I thought, well, that's like 10 times sales. That's not cheap. So, but nevertheless, so. And you can see the chart there. But there's big fans of this stock. I mean, I don't know what they're saying that I'm not. Michael Edmonds, 8th of September for SMD. So, I've got a couple of days. You have to get on that list on the share register to measure, get those conversion stocks into NASDAQ shares.
All right.
There we are.
And, there you go. That's awesome.
Okay. Also, just let's finish off with some business stories, John. I didn't show this. UK business hit by the fastest slowdown since January. UK private sector shrunk for the first time since January, with firms being hit by weakening activities. It's Purchasing Managers Index. We had manufacturing last week. But in fact, let me just put the figures up, you can see them. This is services now. Of course, we're larger. I think 60-odd%, aren't we, service economy, or even more. Yeah. Services dominate in the UK. But you see, below 50 is contracting, and that's where you're heading towards recession.
Who was it? Andy Haldane, who was previously on the Bank of England Monetary Policy Committee, came out today and said 50-50 now.
Yeah,
it's risk of recession. I think he's a man worth listening to, Andy Haldane. Yeah.
And he also said basically, we did actually, do too much quantitative easing, which made the markets rally like crazy.
Yeah,
it of course fueled inflation essentially.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
This is interesting, but what's interesting about this is that slowly, and in fact, I read about China are now doing very well in the EV market in Europe. They've had problems cracking the European market, China, because they see those cars not very good. But apparently, their EV models are looking quite good. I think Warren Buffett is an investor in, is it Bide? I think it's called, or Bid, what it's called, but one of the companies. But new market in the second year of growth is still below pre-pandemic levels, but battery electric cars took their highest monthly market share for the year, accounting for 20% of new cars registered. That's huge, isn't it? A monthly figure, but 20% of new cars registered are battery electric vehicles.
We talked about yesterday. This is an inexorable trend. This is the way we're going.
And that's why I said, regardless of what you think about, you know, if you're an oil and gas stalwart, whatever, it doesn't matter. Follow the money. The money is going into this. You know, every government wants now to get towards electric vehicles and all that stuff, all clean energy. That's where the money's going. As it happens,
it was pointed out to me today is the start of the International Motor Show in Germany.
Oh, is it?
And the surprising thing that was pointed out to me is that actually, you know, the companies that are starting to dominate, you know, particularly in terms of the technology behind electric vehicles and autonomous driving, are coming from Asia. They are no longer the sort of Western giants. So, you know, watch out here.
Well, it's funny. We're going to look for a new car. We're looking at EVs, you know. And now we're like saying, and my wife said, I don't want, you know, sort of a BMW recently, you know, last car. And it's like, it's a rip-off for servicing and all that rubbish. It's just such a rip-off. It's like if you break a wing mirror, they charge you like a grand or something. It's just ridiculous, you know? And we're like, Far Eastern cars. They're not. They're a load more cheaper. The servicing's cheaper. Everything's cheaper. And the quality's quite good. So it's almost like these brands now that are so expensive to run, especially in this where we are at the moment, the cost of living crisis, think, I don't want to spend like ridiculous amounts of money on service, or if you break a wing mirror, there's going to cost you loads of money. It's ridiculous.
I remember Kia some years ago. I didn't buy one. My brother had a Kia, and it was something like three or 5 year all parts guarantee. I mean, you know, and they can do that because they're well engineered.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine down the road, he's got a Kia, and he says it's the best car, EV, his first EV, he says, best car I've ever driven. It's like so fast. The technology inside is amazing. He says he loves it. So, and one other thing I think is that, of course, we are heading, I mean, it's, you know, the Bank of England are choking the economy pretty much. Annual growth in consumer spending on credit card and debit cards slowed to 2.8% in August from 4% in July, which the Bank blamed on continuation of the previous month's rainy weather.
It was the weather.
Yeah, exactly. People can spend their credit cards wherever they are. Have you ever heard of Amazon? Have you heard of online shopping? It's like, it's, you know, I don't know what the percentage is now of people who shop online and, you know, clothes or in high streets, but I think it's probably, it's really quite equal.
Online retail has gone a bit soft.
yeah.
Obviously, because the drivers won't go out when it's raining.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, you know, if you remember, I can't remember before we broke up for the summer. We'd seen sort of better than expected retail sales in month because of better weather or because of the Jubilee or because of the coronation or whatever it is. And of course, you know, we knew August was wet. We knew this was coming. No surprise whatsoever. But as I, you know, as I think I mentioned, then just speaks to the fragility of the consumer at the moment.
Yeah.
There's one other story I know. It was Vistry.
Go on.
Vistry, house builder.
Okay, go on. Yeah.
Very interesting story. This came out with an RNS. They're a preferred delivery partner on two schemes, providing 1,500 new homes.
Yeah.
And I think, as you know, we were debating, or I was, I said I was debating on Twitter, what sort of houses we need. This scheme is 50% affordable housing, affordable rent, shared ownership with Milton Keynes Council. So I do wonder if, you know, in fact, I believe my thesis is that a lot more house building business will have to go down this route. You know, if they want to keep building, it's going to have to be, you know, affordable housing in partnership with local authorities.
Yeah. Instant. And very much like, in fact, you could see proof that again, look at that. This area here, we got this is the COVID lows here.
We've got
the lows in October. And even with all the bad news priced in, could you say now this is maybe we're hit a level where we're, you know,
all the bad news priced in? Angela Rayner's just been made Shadow Housing Secretary.
Is that good or bad?
I think it's quite a good thing because, you know, as I say, I do believe this is a sector that has got away with murder for many, many years.
Literally,
got away with some environmental murder. That's for sure. And it's got away. It's got away with selling some really shonky houses to people at far more than they're actually worth. So you know, and you know, essentially, profiteered enormously from the structural shortage of housing in the UK. So I do think it's going to, you know, there is going to be more of a demand that house builders go down this route. And I can't imagine they'll be able to generate the margins out of this that they could out of private sales.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see if it's a structural change, because we think Labour's going to get in. Structural change for house builders, you know, will they regain those previous highs? Or that doubt that they will do that, is that where the opportunity lies? It's that's the fun of investing, isn't it?
Yeah, but my belief is that their models, the industry will have to change.
Yeah, well, they're murderers. Of course,
they're not murderers, literally, are they?
I mean, if that's what they're doing, of course the model has to change. That's not sustainable, murdering. Okay. Thanks very much, everyone. If you haven't hit subscribe, hit that subscribe button right there, and we'll be back again at midday tomorrow with some more of the same. But it's always different. Different news every day. And, you know, if you can bring some comments there, it'd be great. And you can comment after the video, by the way. We will pick up tomorrow if you do. Cheers, John. Speak tomorrow.
Speak tomorrow.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.